Please stand clear of the doors. Por favor, manténganse alejado de las puertas.
Welcome aboard the Walt Disney World Express Monorail, our highway in the sky. For those of you standing, please hold on to the handrails throughout our journey and stay clear of the doors. For the comfort of others, no smoking, please. Thank you.
Hi, folks, you're listening to Two Men and the Mouse, episode 279, recorded live on the YDF Media Network on March 28th, 2024. This is your everyday guide to the magic of Walt Disney World and the larger Disney universe beyond it. My name is Kevin Kessler, and I am joined, as always, by my good buddy, Peter Mandel.
Hey, Kev.
Hey, Pete, what is going on, buddy?
Not much, you?
Magic Kingdom yesterday. It was fun.
Oh,
folks,
nice.
We are two lifelong Disney fanatics who have managed to keep the magic of Disney alive in our lives every day. We want to share that magic with you. So pull up a chair, gather the family, or pop in your favorite set of headphones, and let's experience the magic together. Pete!
Kevin.
Okay, so, went to Magic Kingdom yesterday, had a good time. We only went for like a short while. Like, when we got there, the parking lot was like pretty empty, and I was like, oh, did we luck out today? Like, is today a good day? And we got in. Everything had an hour-long wait. Like, you know.
Wow.
It was a lot. We did Pirates, and we did the Swiss Family Treehouse for some reason, because we were walking by it. Rachel was like, "Oh, I haven't done that since I was a kid," and I was like, "All right, let's do it." And you know, it was kind of like the Fairly Odd Parents like escalator land, where it was like, "When do we get to the ride? This is the ride! Yay!"
Right.
But yeah, we.
I can remember one of my first trips ever to Universal. We did Twister Ride It,
okay,
based on the movie Twister,
right?
So we go in and
the movie Twister, see it,
yeah. So we go in and we do the ride, and you're watching that they make this Twister, whatever, it's cool. And I'm like, okay, now we exit into the ride. No, now you exit. That was it. I'm like, it's called
the ride.
Ride It. Like, why?
Oh boy, the Yeah, well, we'll get to some disappointing ride experiences today in our e-ticket attraction. So, all right, but now moving right along, we ate lunch at Sleepy Hollow Treats, because usually that sweet and spicy chicken and waffle sandwich is like a must-do for me.
Right, everyone says it's great.
I did not like it this time. I don't know if it was just the day of. So, first of all, it was kind of like, you know, sometimes, like, you know, somebody has to get those chicken tenders from like the bottom of the basket that are like a little like burnt and overly crispy.
Yep.
I definitely got those in the sandwich, and the sweet and spice, like hot honey chicken has kind of become like a thing lately. I've noticed a lot of places doing hot honey chicken, and I like hot honey chicken. And I was like, oh, the sweet and spicy chicken and waffle sandwich is hot honey chicken, basically.
Perfect.
We just had a hot honey chicken sandwich at Connections over at Epcot, and it was fantastic. And, you know, Publix has a hot honey chicken sub right now. So I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm definitely going to go back to the original Disney hot honey chicken. It was just basically honey chicken. Like, there was no savory spiciness to it. There was like
overly sweet.
It was just like chicken dipped in honey, basically. And I was like, that's kind of like, I didn't like that at all. So
right.
Rachel got a corn dog, because that's like the safest thing. She always gets a corn dog there. But we are drawing infinitely closer to Rachel's yearly turkey leg.
She has turkey like once a year?
Yeah, once a year she gets in this like mode where she's just like, I'm really craving a turkey leg. And then like halfway through the turkey leg, she's like, yeah, I'm good for another year. All right, moving on to the news. Our news brought to you by our friends over at Away With Me Travel, who will plan all of your travel needs, especially those Disney and Universal parks. We got a lot of news this week, and we're going to start with worldwide news. And we're going to stay there for a little while. First up in the worldwide news, Peter Mandel, don't call it a comeback, but Joe Rohde has confirmed that he is working with Walt Disney Imagineering again.
Oh, I wonder why he left in the first place.
Well, he retired.
Mm-hmm.
While his exact employment status remains unclear, Joe posted a short video of himself entering the famous Walt Disney Imagineering building on Flower Street with the caption, "Do a bit of work at the old farm." I wonder if this has anything to do with our report last week on the fact that the Animal Kingdom expansion seems to be moving ahead, and you're not doing that without Joe Rohde.
It's got to be pretty cool to have like an entire theme park that's widely considered by most Disney fans to be your park.
Yes, yours. It's yours. You made it. Like,
Like if Joe Rohde's like, hey, you know what? We got this new ride coming and it's awesome. We're all going to be like, it's awesome because like we trust him, right. You know?
Shortly after Joe's post, Walt Disney Imagineering posted to say that Joe is leading a series of masterclass work sessions for current Imagineers. So it is unknown if he's involved in any projects. I mean, I think if you're doing that Animal Kingdom expansion, he's at least a consultant on it, right?
Yeah.
Maybe he doesn't want to do full-time work on it. And like he did with Pandora, because he was in charge of Pandora and all that stuff. But yeah, we'll see. I did the Bob Iger masterclass on the masterclass website. It was interesting. I was doing it for work. I had a client at the time that was literally like reviewing masterclasses, being like, is the Bob Iger masterclass worth your time and money? And so like, I got to take like a million different masterclasses for free. And was one of the ones that I was like, I really want to do the Bob Iger one if no one else has taken it. And so I did that one. It was very good. It was, I don't remember much about it. Like the ones that were really good were like Bob Iger was good. Neil Gaiman was fantastic. I mean, as an author, I did the one from the lady. I don't remember her name. I'm so ashamed that I don't remember her name. She's the one that wrote, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret.
Okay.
She had a really good masterclass for writing. I didn't get to do the Gordon Ramsay one. I was so pissed.
Oh, that sounds like it'd be great.
Somebody else took the Gordon Ramsay one. They had me do one about like Indian cooking, and like,
okay,
look, I don't like Indian food. Like the very sight of it kind of like makes me feel sick. And this was just like nonstop looking at Indian food. And I was like, it's not like I don't like the taste. Like I think the taste of Indian food is fine. I just, my body doesn't like it. Like I get like sick if I eat it. Yeah. Curry and me, we don't get along very well. So, you know, like.
How was the Nelson Peltz masterclass?
I should have taken that one, right? I'm trying to think of what other masterclasses I did. I did like a whole slew of them. Oh, Ron Howard was a good one.
Oh, cool.
Deadmau5 was one of them, which, you know, like EDM like guy with the big, that one stunk. Is that his name, deadmau5, or is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Are you sure? Right? Is it deadmau5?
No, I'm not sure.
Hold on. I'm going to look it up real quick. Cause I don't think it's deadmau5. It is deadmau5. Dead MAU5.
Yeah. MAUF. Right.
Yeah, and the one thing that I remember learning in there is that I really don't like him, like, as a person. he was just kind of obnoxious. And, like, some people are, like, really excited to do their masterclass. Like, Ron Howard was super, like, into it, and he was like, oh, wow, I can't wait to, like, explain all this stuff to you guys. deadmau5 was like, man, like, this is a nice paycheck that I'm doing this for. He basically was just kind of like, here's how you do it. You probably can't do it. Like he didn't say that, but that was kind of like the tone of his voice. I did the James Cameron one, and it almost made me like James Cameron.
Was it about film? Was it about exploration?
No, it was about film. It's about film. Oh, okay. It was interesting a lot of times, because he talked a lot about like the things that he had to do to like prepare for films. You know, like a lot of the exploration that he did for Pandora and storytelling stuff. And it was just, it was good. Like a lot of them are masterclass, I think is a good time for just about anything you want to do.
Right.
Highly recommended. Yeah. The Bob Iger one was cool though. He talked a lot about like, he's just like, here's how you can use other people's money to buy things.
That's interesting.
my buddy calls Bob Iger the great purchaser.
Well, it makes sense.
Yeah. All right. So in further worldwide news, Joe Rohde has also been added to the list of Disney legends that will be honored in the class this year at D23.
Okay.
Yep. And soon to be Disney legend Joe Rohde has taken to Instagram to comment on the announcement that the former Imagineer will be inducted as a Disney legend. Joe is best known for his time at Walt Disney Imagineering as the overall creative executive and supervising designer for Animal Kingdom theme park, including later expansions such as Expedition Everest and Pandora. Joe's other notable projects include the Adventurers Club, formerly a part of Pleasure Island at Walt Disney World, Aulani, a Disney resort and spa and co. And in 2022, he received the Disney Conservation Fund's first Conservation Legacy Award and appeared on numerous documentaries about Imagineering. So here's what he said. Check it out. I'm honored, along with some other pretty cool folks, to join the 2024 class of Disney Legends at D23, the Ultimate Disney Fan Event. If you've never been there, take it from me. It really is ultimate. While I'm flattered and proud to receive such recognition, I flat out reject it. No, he didn't say that. The real honors go to the people who gave me a chance, the people who mentored and guided me, the people who forgave me when I did foolish things, the people who trusted me to direct them and lead them, the people who actually did the work with their own hands, my family who put up with decades of my coming and going, and not least the guests and audiences who receive all of our work with such enthusiasm. And regardless of whatever accomplishment warrants this honor, there would be no Disney Legends at all if not for the most legendary Walt Disney himself, whose creative impact on an entire century will always far outpace any legends who will trail in his wake. As for me, I will have to decide whether I want to memorialize my handprints or figure out some way to press the side of my head with my earrings into the cement. In any case, see you there. I would like if he did the Gonzo thing from like the end of Muppets Go to Walt Disney World. Okay, so Disney has also now launched an Instagram for Walt Disney World annual pass holders. It's at WDW annual pass holders. The bio says, here you leave today and enter the official world of Mickey Pretzels, park hopping, and endless pass holder magic. There isn't much to see yet, but the account has already gained over 8,000 followers. I'm not one of them yet. I have not done that yet. I will later today. Orlando International Airport has set a new passenger record this month.
Okay.
So on Saturday, March 16th, 2024, Orlando International Airport reached a significant milestone by processing 102,064 departing passengers in a single day, not counting those arriving. Including arrivals, the total number of passengers reached 204,128, marking the highest traffic the airport has witnessed in its history. The surge in passenger numbers comes during spring break 2024, which saw an estimated increase of 11% over the previous year's figures. The previous record for daily passengers at MCO, Florida's busiest airport, was established on December 30th, 2023, with 98,521 passengers. This figure was exceeded on March 15th, the day before the airport set its new all-time high. Here's a look at passenger numbers at MCO over the last 10 years, and it ranges from 34,768,415 in 2013 to 57,735,726 in 2023. So that's insane.
All right. Yeah.
You know, and this is like when people try to make the like, there's a lot you can say about like the Disney company's success at the box office lately. Or, you know, with like Disney Plus, but the people that try to tell me that the parks are like empty and that like nobody goes to Disney World anymore. And, you know, I'm like, you're wrong. Like, you're flat out wrong. Like, I have a buddy who like swears by this that like, oh, nobody's at the parks anymore. Galaxy's Edge is a failure. I'm like, dude, I wish nobody went. Like, I'd be so happy. I'd be so happy if it was empty. And it's just not the case. Like, you go there and it's just packed with people still. We were there just yesterday and there were hour waits for everything at Magic Kingdom. So, you know, that's not really like
it really, you know, money is kind of the deciding factor in all this. It's funny. Like, I have a friend who very similar thing about baseball. He's like, oh, nobody watches baseball anymore. It's like a dying sport. Like, it's not even going to be around. And I'm like, really? The Dodgers just paid Shohei Ohtani $70 million a year for 10 years. You know, like most payrolls in baseball exceed that of the NFL salary cap. Do you know why? Because they're making money.
Yeah.
Like, don't tell me no one watches it. Dude, obviously, people still do.
When you look at things like the WWE, right? So 10 years ago, you had 6 to 8 million people watching Raw on a Monday night. All right. Now you get 1 to 2 million. So by a theory, like, it should be that, like, oh, like, wrestling is so not popular, WWE is in the dumps. But in actuality, because WWE is a publicly traded company, TKO Holdings is a publicly traded company, when you look at the money they're making more money than they've ever made before. Like, record high profits. So it's sometimes it's not, you know, that's not the best judge. In further worldwide news, Disney cast member to guest lanyard pin trading is returning to all of Walt Disney World this April.
I read that and I didn't even realize that it didn't exist anymore. But it's not something I really do.
I mean, I've seen them with like the cork boards and stuff like that. So pin trading between cast and guests went on hiatus for more than 3 years following the pandemic before returning to Disney Springs in November of last year. Cast members at Disney Springs are trading with guests using the familiar pin-covered lanyards that were commonplace pre-pandemic. Pin trading has also been available in a limited capacity at trading boards in various locations throughout Walt Disney World, including pin traders at Disney Springs and some merchandise locations around the resort. However, Disney has announced that cast to guest lanyard pin trading will fully return on April 7th, 2024. So just, you know, little ways from now. Coming back. Big return.
Yep.
And, you know, that was the big new, big worldwide news this week was about cast to guest lanyard training. Now, in lesser worldwide news, Disney has announced that Disney Dreams, a solar drone show, is coming to Walt Disney World this summer. You know, just casually. Now, this is the big news in worldwide news this week. We've been talking about it for a while, the drones coming, but it will be coming in the summer. Disney Dreams That Soar is a summertime experience that will be a late night perk for visitors. Taking place over the Disney Springs Lake, Disney Dreams That Soar will showcase Disney stories coming to life, celebrating the joy of flight with state-of-the-art drones choreographed to create designs in the sky that paired with the soaring musical score and memorable movie quotes. Disney Dreams That Soar will run nightly from May 24th through September 2nd. So it's getting, this is a, you know, a limited run. But again, we're getting a nighttime show at Disney Springs. That's pretty
cool. I think it's the best thing they could do.
Disney began testing drones at Disney Springs earlier this year following their popularity in Disneyland Paris, with recent offerings including Disney Electrical Sky Parade, which uses 500 drones to recreate moments from classic Disney, from the classic Disney Main Street Electrical Parade. Disney has long been developing drones for shows and for shows in the parks, with both Epcot and Magic Kingdom strongly linked with their use. News of Disney developing drone technology for use in nighttime spectaculars surfaced in late 2014 with the filing of various patents related to their Fixel system that used drones to carry a projection surface. You know, we've been talking about this for years and years, you know, since the creation of the show, we've been talking about, like, you know, them using drones. So it looks like we're finally getting there. And of course, you know, Walt Disney World previously hosted a limited time drone show, Star Bright Holidays, at Disney Springs for the 2016 holiday season in association with Intel and its Shooting Star Drone project. That was a 5-minute show that featured 300 drones that were choreographed in 3D space over Disney Springs Lake and synchronized to holiday music. So this is going to be something pretty cool. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. And a perfect place for it.
Yep.
People are there at night.
Yep.
Something to occupy people. I think it sounds great.
Yeah. All right. So no resort news, water park news, or Disney Springs news other than that drone show. Magic Kingdom news, though. The Barrel Bridge has returned to Tom Sawyer Island.
Okay.
The one-of-a-kind Barrel Bridge. I think it's one of the big, the big attractions over there on Tom Sawyer Island.
When was the last time you crossed that bridge?
Oh gosh, the last time I was on Tom Sawyer Island, which was probably pre-pandemic, a couple years ago.
Yeah.
I don't know. I remember it was the day that the Last Jedi trailer premiered, because I was at Star Wars Celebration earlier that day. Or no, I'm sorry. It was after that. Anyway, I don't remember. The long-missing Barrel Bridge has returned to Tom Sawyer Island at Frontierland at the Magic Kingdom. The bridge was removed months ago, and it started to look like it might not make a return. An all-new bridge, however, is now in place, but it remains blocked off at both ends while work is completed. The Barrel Bridge provides a playful and slightly challenging way to cross from one part of Tom Sawyer Island to another. It consists of a series of floating barrels connected end-to-end, creating a bridge that shifts about and bobs under the weight of those crossing it. This movement adds a sense of adventure and requires a bit of balance to navigate, making it a favorite among children and adults alike seeking a bit of lighthearted fun. You know, we almost went to Tom Sawyer Island yesterday. Rachel doesn't know that, but we were walking by in Frontierland, and I almost was like, hey, let's go to Tom Sawyer Island. Like, let's see what's going on over there. And then, you know, I just didn't do it.
But you know what's going on over there.
Yeah, I do. It's the same thing that's always good. But she's never been over there. Disney has revealed a series of characters that will be in Tiana's Bayou Adventure. These are various animatronic critters that will appear as musical guests. Walt Disney Imagineering Executive Creative Director of Tiana's Bayou Adventure, Ted Robledo, or Robledo, has shared an inside look at a key story element and the new musical critters that will be part of Tiana's Bayou Adventure at Walt Disney World's Magic Kingdom. In the bayou, Princess Tiana is getting ready to throw a big party, but there's been a bit of a mix-up between Prince Naveen and Louis, and the princess suddenly finds herself in need of a band. A true Mardi Gras celebration isn't complete without music, and riders will follow Tiana and Louis into the bayou in a last-minute search for this essential missing ingredient for her party, musical critters. The first critter encounter, guests discover a group of critter musicians playing a rendition of Gonna Take You There from The Princess and the Frog. Ted says this raucous Zydeco musical recipe of fiddle, accordion, washboard, and other instrument voices will have you singing along as you float down the river under dancing fireflies. The familiar medley is being played on charming makeshift instruments constructed from natural materials and some human-made found objects. Here are some of the adorable musicians that bring the scene to life. By Halia the Beaver. By Halia doesn't just build dams, she helps build musical instruments using natural materials from the bayou. As a strong-willed percussionist, it's safe to say that By Halia is the heartbeat of the band, as well as a natural designer and engineer. That is By Halia the Beaver. Gritty the Rabbit, not to be confused with Gritty the Philadelphia Flyers mascot.
Right. who's terrifying?
Who's terrifying? I would love if you were going to Tiana's bio adventure and Gritty is just like sitting there playing like a musical instrument. I'd be like, oh my god!
It's also slightly a horror ride.
I love Gritty. I think he's great. Gritty the Rabbit, always willing to dig a little deeper to help others. Gritty plays the washboard, a found automobile license plate with a high energy flare. It's the perfect instrument for someone who's often overzealous and digs to relieve her nerves. Bo, the opossum. I don't like opossums.
Yeah, I get it.
Tiny Toon Adventures, how I spent my summer vacation, gave me this like deep-seated like childhood fear of possums. When they go to like, they meet like these like hillbilly possums, and it's like a creepy scene.
Yeah.
Bo the opossum, seeing limitless possibilities, no one finds more wonder in the bayou and the sound of Zydeco music than Bo. All she knows is beauty, especially her own. You can find her plucking out the low notes with her upright gourd bass, which of course involves some musical dexterity with her tail. Apollo the raccoon.
Okay, Apollo, I love the name.
Yeah, Apollo loves transforming abandoned objects into works of musical art, like his squeeze box. He's full of energy and storytelling, especially about the objects he finds in the bayou. He's particularly close with Rufus and appreciates Rufus's calm demeanor. Now you may be asking yourself, who the heck is Rufus? Rufus the turtle! Rufus may be a turtle, but he's quick to jump into rhythm with his harmonica. He's also the first to join in on new adventures. He's genuine and sincere, but may come across as a little sarcastic at times with his habitual sighing. Rufus loves going on adventures with Apollo. Now, do you think like we're going to like get to know these characters well enough to like be like, oh, there's Rufus being all sarcastic, like, or are they just going to be like, man, there's a lot of these. Timoleon, the otter. He's the eldest of the band, but Timoleon's fiddle playing is inspired by all the kids he spends his time around while in the bayou. When he's not sawing out a jig, he's famous for telling stories of days long ago about his explorations of every corner of the bayou. Bo, Apollo, and Rufus will also soon be available in the form of huggable plushies for you to take home. So, there you go.
I mean, here's the thing, right? Chubby works. Even though he's barely in the ride.
Chubby does work. I mean,
but it works because it's just Chubby.
Right. My fiance is, you know, proof positive that Chubby works because she's obsessed.
Right. We all love Chubby.
But this is
like, hey, here's a whole cast of characters.
Yeah. Now everybody
learn their names.
Everybody learn. Yeah. Learn their names, species, and character quirks that are just going to like, do you really, I really don't think I'm going to be going out there being like, man, you know, that turtle was so sarcastic.
Which one of these animals has a squeeze box?
Yeah.
It's like a quiz.
Yeah. All right. Epcot news. Ready for this? The opening date has been announced for Communicore Hall in Epcot. That's huge news.
Okay.
Disney has announced today that Communicore Hall will open June 10th, 2024 at Epcot. Opening alongside Communicore Plaza from June 10th to September 6th will be a new sing-along featuring the beloved songs and story of Encanto. This new limited-time show, Celebración Encanto, runs several times through the day and will not only invite you and your family to sing along with some of your favorite songs, but you'll also spot Mirabel and Bruno on the newly opened Communicore Plaza stage. Communicore Hall will be home to the iconic Epcot festivals and other celebrations. Disney says it will also be a perfect cool indoor space year-round for you and your family to recharge. Communicore Hall will also be home to an indoor Mickey and Friends character meet and greet. The surrounding Communicore Plaza will feature a garden with space to view entertainment from a covered performance stage and seating for nearby festival food and drink kiosks. So, Communicore Hall, it's coming.
All right.
It's June.
Maybe this year.
I mean, it says June.
I know it does.
You know, we'll see. In further, so that means no more construction walls in Epcot.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds wonderful.
In other news, construction walls are up in Epcot right now, in the Morocco Pavilion. So it seems that the lengthy refurbishment of the Morocco Pavilion was wrapped up last year. A large section of the pavilion, however, is now behind refurbishment walls. I guess the large center section, including the fountain and archway, is currently blocked. Yeah, there's a lot of walls. Guests can still access the buildings throughout the Morocco Pavilion via a narrow walkway on either side of the central walls. So, you know, it's still a wall world in some areas of Epcot.
Yeah.
Epcot, and there's going to be an Epcot special called Epcot Becoming that's going to be produced by National Geographic. I don't really know.
Will that be on the Disney Plus?
I'm assuming, yes, it will be on the Disney Plus and the Hulu. Get ready for an exclusive.
What do you think of the drama about Disney Plus changing their
color scheme?
The color. Yeah.
I was like, really, I don't like it. I was like, I went on the other day.
I don't
like
it either.
Like, that royal blue was so like iconic, and now it's like this puke blue green. Like,
I know.
It looks like someone threw up Kool-Aid. Ugh, I don't know. I didn't like it. Get ready for an exclusive glimpse into the Epcot transformation with a new National Geographic special premiering April 29th at 10, 9 Central on National Geographic and streaming later on Disney Plus and Hulu. Epcot Becoming showcases the reimagining of Epcot for a new generation. Watch as Walt Disney World Resort teams rise to the challenge of bringing the constantly evolving park into the future, from creating an innovative new coaster to exploring the wonders of water and culminating with the debut of the next legacy in nighttime spectaculars, Luminous, the Symphony of Us. Epcot Becoming premieres at April 29th. So, Epcot Becoming. It is becoming to your to a television set near you. Hollywood Studios news: new dishes are coming to Mama Melrose Ristorante Italiano.
Okay.
Mama Melrose will be refreshing its menu with several new dishes. Known for its cozy atmosphere and authentic Italian dishes, the restaurant aims to offer guests a wider variety of options to choose from. There will be rigatoni bolognese, a braised pork osso buco, fried mozzarella sticks, a.k.a. just, you know, mozzarella sticks, goat cheese and a goat cheese mousse tart, fettuccine alfredo with shrimp. That looks amazing. And it looks like a mushroom artichoke cheese dip. New stuff coming up. I haven't eaten Mama Melrose in forever. I might want to do that again sometime soon.
It's been a couple years for me also.
Joy from Inside Out is going to be having a new meet and greet location in Disney's Hollywood Studios over at Pixar Plaza.
Oh, nice.
That will, yes, it's for Inside Out 2, which premieres in theaters June 14th. The new Joy meet and greet begins June the 10th. Now we've got some outside Walt Disney World news here. Disney has unveiled a brand new cruise ship for Disney Cruise Line that's going to be heroes and villains themed.
Cool.
The Disney Destiny, a sister ship to the Disney Wish and Disney Treasure, will have a first-of-its-kind design theme, heroes and villains, drawing on the legacies of beloved Disney stories, characters, and theme park attractions. The Disney Cruise Line and Walt Disney Imagineering teams were inspired by the dynamic duality of every great Disney story when developing this new ship, where opposing forces of light and dark drive characters to rise to their purpose. On board, guests will encounter heroes and villains alike, including those from beloved Walt Disney animation stories like The Lion King, Hercules, and 101 Dalmatians within spaces, experiences, and entertainment throughout the voyage. Minnie Mouse embodies the spirit of the Disney Destiny in this brand new filigree artwork for the bow of the ship, continuing a beloved Disney Cruise Line design tradition. Donning a heroic new ensemble, cape and all, and a valiant pose, she will boldly lead guests on epic cruise locations. The Disney Destiny also reached a new construction milestone with the keel laying ceremony at the Meyer Werft shipyard in Papenburg, Germany, which is a maritime tradition designed to bestow good luck on the ship. The ship is scheduled for delivery in 2025 as part of a multi-year expansion into the Disney Cruise Line fleet that includes the Disney Wish and Disney Treasure. The Disney Adventure that will home port in Singapore and the new island destination in the Bahamas, Disney Lookout Key at Lighthouse Point. So there you go. I don't think I'm going on it if it's going to be home port against Singapore, but they might debut it though in Florida, just because they usually debut the ships here. Finally, in the news this week, Universal has revealed more information this morning on the Isle of Berk from How to Train Your Dragon, which will be part of Universal's Epic Universe. Did you see this morning?
I did not.
I watched the video on it before we went on the air. It looks really cool. The rides are not what I was expecting. I was expecting something a little bit more like Flight of Passage. But so this is one of the five worlds featured in Epic Universe, opening in 2025. Universal says guests will experience what it's like to live amongst dragons as they explore the larger-than-life world. Okay, so the world includes exciting attractions, beloved character meet-and-greets, dining, shopping, and even flying dragons. Developed in partnership between Universal Creative, DreamWorks Animation, and Universal Pictures, How to Train Your Dragon Isle of Berk recreates the rugged, rocky world where raucous Vikings and rambunctious dragons live together in hilarious harmony. The company says the guests visiting Berk will encounter one of the most breathtaking environments Universal has ever created, complete with immense architecture featuring hand-carved designs, lush landscaping, and extraordinary heights of rolling hills surrounding vibrant dragon houses and local establishments. All right, so what do we got here? Guests' first sight of Berk will be reminiscent of the iconic sweeping vista straight from the films, featuring a vast sparkling lagoon that boasts two 40-foot-tall Viking statues set against an energetic village perched above the churning seas. Guests will discover four attractions, one live show, and several character and dragon meet and greet experiences that offer something for every member of the family. This includes Hiccup's Wing Gliders, a family thrill coaster. Hiccup invites brave new Vikings to take part in his latest glider contraption, a winged flying machine that launches aspiring dragon riders into the sky for a dragon's eye view of Berk. Guests will fly alongside Hiccup and Toothless and reach speeds of up to 45 miles per hour as they soar around the perimeter of Berk and even through the lagoon while experiencing firsthand what it's like to fly on a dragon. This looks pretty cool. I mean, it's like a standard roller coaster, like you're sitting down and everything.
Right.
The Untrainable Dragon, inspired by Universal's Beijing Resort's wildly successful Untrainable show. This dragon-filled live spectacular takes guests on an unforgettable journey with beloved characters Hiccup, Toothless, Gobber, and Astrid as they work together to solve the mystery of the Untrainable Dragon. This heartwarming story comes to life with captivating musical numbers, breathtaking sets, and life-size dragons soaring overhead. Fire Drill. Mischievous Viking twins Roughnut and Toughnut have invited teams of Vikings to compete to outscore and out-soak each other in this wet and wild boat ride. Guests will board a colorful dragon-headed boat and blast water cannons at flame-like targets to practice putting out fires, a crucial skill to master when living with dragons. This looks pretty cool. It looks like an old, like, boatcraft kind of, like, ride. Like, you're riding on a boat and you're, like, shooting water cannons and stuff.
Okay.
Dragons Racers Rally. Berk's new Viking racers can practice aerobatic maneuvers at high-speed barrel rolls on two Viking-made dragon-riding trainers that reach heights up to 67 feet in the air. Guests can control how wild or mild their experience will be as they perform high-flying, gravity-defying, swooping, and soaring skills that are necessary to earn the accolades worthy of a true champion dragon racer. Then you've got the Viking Training Camp, which junior Vikings will learn everything they need to know about dragons as they climb, slide, and explore their way through this sprawling interactive adventure play camp. This will also have a Viking agility course, a Toothless-themed teeter-totter, baby Gronkle dragon climbers, and so much more. You will also be able to meet Hiccup and Toothless over at the Haddock Paddock for an incredible meet-and-greet experience with Hiccup and pose for a photo with his friendly Night Fury Toothless. Plus, throughout the day, guests may also encounter other familiar Vikings and dragons while exploring Berk. The Mead Hall. The beating heart of Berk and the village's main gathering hall, the Mead Hall, is where guests can feast like a Viking and enjoy a savory menu featuring a variety of meats, fish, sandwiches, and more, along with a collection of meads and ciders. That's exciting for me because I do love me some mead. Mead is good.
And cider.
The Spitfire Grill, overlooking the action of the Fire Drill water attraction. Spitfire Grill is a quick service dining location featuring delicious, hearty meals, flames seared by a helpful, unseen dragon fry cook. Hooligans, Grog, and Gruel. Also, guests can grab quick bites at this festive racing-themed food stand located at the Viking camp. After a day of dragon training, guests can commemorate their lessons with an array of merchandise available at highly themed shops like Viking Traders, How to Treat Your Dragon, Hiccup's Workshop, and Toothless's Treasures. There you go.
That's How to Treat Your Dragon. That's a great name.
That's a great one, yeah. All right, so that does it for the news this week. We are going to be right back with our e-ticket attraction of the week. Stay tuned, folks. More Two Men in the Mouse coming at you right after this.
This is Bill Farmer, and you're listening to Two Men and the Mouse.
Folks, Disney attractions and attractions in Orlando theme parks in general really try to capture magic and immerse you in stories. Sometimes it's not as possible to do that in a real life setting, which is why these motion simulator rides have been created. These are attractions that take you outside of reality into a new virtual reality and makes you feel like you're really there through movement and interactive screens and all these kinds of awesome, amazing magic that can only be created in theme parks like this. However, some of them are great, while others are not so great. So this week, for our e-ticket attraction of the week, Pete and I are talking about the five best motion simulators in Orlando and the five worst. This is not just going to be present day. We're going all time here. Like, so even now defunct rides can be placed into this, right?
Yeah.
That's what we're going with. All right. So you want to start? You want to go best, worst, best, worst, best, worst? Or do you want to do like all the best and all the worst?
Oh, yeah, wow. That's interesting. You know what? Yeah, let's do best, worst. Let's alternate.
Okay. All right. Let's start with the best. Number five. All right. So these are going from like they're all good in the best, but like number one is going to be the best of the best. Number one for the worst would be the worst of the worst. Transformers at Universal Orlando Resort. I love Transformers. It is like I argued that Transformers should have been higher on the list, but you made some good points. I just think it's so wonderfully immersive. The first time I rode Transformers, I was in awe of it. And whenever I bring friends to Universal, I'm like, we got to do Transformers first. Like, it's always the first thing I want to do.
I love it, but you know,
I don't even love the Transformers that much. I just think it's pretty cool. Like it, yeah. Everything.
My gripes with it are it's a straight clone. And I feel like the effects are kind of shoehorned in a little bit because this is how it has to work.
Right, because it is a clone of another attraction, which we'll get to later in this list. I would agree with that. I think that the graphics are really cool. I think that graphically it is better than the attraction that it is a clone of. Because sometimes we'll get to that when we get to that particular attraction. But yeah, Transformers, I absolutely love it. One of my all-time favorites. Ready to go to the worst, number five.
Yep.
This is our one defunct attraction on this list. We had to include it because it was one of the earliest motion simulators Disney ever tried to do. And while the concept was great, the execution made you feel like you had just been executed. That is Body Wars from the now defunct Wonders of Life Pavilion. This was a rough ride. I mean, like, in every conceivable way. Like, you walked out feeling...
It was hard to deal with.
It really bounced you around a lot, like almost too much, to the point where like when I left Body Wars, I felt like I was going to throw up and I felt like I had just been in a fight.
I remember our very first trip, you know, so it's back in the day where maps were so crucial. We had come home and we were looking at the maps later and Heather was so mad that we missed Body Wars and didn't do it that she was like, we have to go back and I need to ride this. And we rode it and she was like, whoa.
Yeah, never again.
One time experience.
Yeah, Body Wars was a rough time, man. There's a reason why it's not like it's an important piece of Disney history, Body Wars, but I think it's not terribly missed.
But a great concept. I mean, for those of you old enough to remember the movie Inner Space, it is very similar to Inner Space, so it's pretty neat.
I think that we should like maybe do a whole like in-depth look at Body Wars eventually. Like as an e-ticket attraction, just to like kind of like see what the concept was and how it came about and when it went away and all that other great stuff. Yep. You know, the Wonders of Life Pavilion, obviously the entire thing is gone now. And I don't think that Play Pavilion is ever happening.
Not me neither.
I think that idea was just scrapped pretty much. All right, ready to go back to the best. A little positivity in here. We're going back to Universal Studios and we're going to Spider-Man over at Islands of Adventure in the Marvel Island. Now, this is the attraction that Transformers is a clone of.
An exact clone.
Like the track and effects are exactly the same. Like from like when like Megatron gets hit with the water and you get hit with the water is the same as the Hydro Man spot.
Yep.
The only thing that Transformers doesn't have is the fire from the Hobgoblin. That fire thing doesn't happen. But I mean, even like when the Hobgoblin like grabs you with his glider, it's the same as when Starscream grabs you. When you fall and get caught by the spider web, it's the same as when Bumblebee catches you.
Yep. Yep. Having said that, I adore the Spider-Man ride.
I do too.
I love it. I mean, still to this day, I love it.
Yeah, it is a really fun adventure. It is kind of like, how do I put it? Like, from the beginning to end. I love going through the Daily Bugle. I love even just like the entrance when you walk in, there's the big picture of J. Jonah Jameson. I love that Jameson is so integral to the attraction. Like being like,
oh, it's totally like the 90s cartoon.
Yes.
It's got that aesthetic to it.
I mean, look,
the vehicle, the scoop.
Yeah, the scoop. Originally, it was supposed to be called the Spider, but then it was called the scoop is a way better name.
You know, listen, I love ride vehicles. I'm always fascinated with them. I think they're really cool.
The same ride vehicle that Transformers do. The scoop is the same as EVAC.
Yeah, what is it in Transformers? You're riding
EVAC.
EVAC. That's it. Yeah,
he's a Transformer. Which is a cool touch. I liked that.
Me too.
The one thing I don't. So first of all, I mean, it's very look. I think the writing was the way it was in Spider-Man on purpose because they wanted it to be like a comic book where it's just like I am Dr. Octopus, soon to be ruler of the world. I love this concept that like if a villain steals the Statue of Liberty, we're just gonna like give them like ownership of the entire world to get it back. Because that was the plot of both this ride and the classic Super Nintendo game Turtles in Time, an arcade game. They steal the Statue of Liberty, and we're just like, oh my god, we have to get it back. Give them whatever they want. The writing is one thing. I also don't. The 3D is a little outdated at times. They've updated the 3D. It's better than it was. I don't like the dimensions on the characters though. Like when Electro like comes in close, he's like enormous, and I'm like, you shouldn't be that. Like, you're just trying to use size of a person.
But they're trying to use force perspective.
It doesn't work. I don't think. Like,
they're trying to make it seem like he's really in your face.
But I mean, I love look things I love in that ride. All the different Stan Lees that you can find. He's all over that ride. I love the music in it. The music is so cool.
Yep. It's wonderful.
The really weird inclusion of Scream as one of the villains.
Well, you know, if you think about the 90s, that they were trying to really push that. So
yeah, they were trying to push those symbiotes. Yeah, it was just really weird that it was like her and not like Carnage or something like that. I mean, I like Scream, and I love what they did with her in the Spider-Man 2 video game. But I hear a lot of like kids in the queue being like, "Who's that?" Nobody really knows. I even love like the video of like how to get into the scoop, because it shows like everybody like trying to get in failing and Jameson being like it's fantastic. And I love like, who doesn't love that Stan Lee line at the end? That's why I hope, like, while it was like, oh yeah, I wish Universal would close the Marvel Island so Disney can get the rights back to it and do their own Marvel Land, I'm also like, I never want this Spider-Man ride to go away, because you have that beautiful moment at the end where Stan Lee talks, and I'm like, I always want this to be here. I don't know.
Yeah, I get that.
All right, ready to talk about something that stinks?
Yep.
Number 4 worst, going back to Universal for the Despicable Me / Jimmy Neutron motion simulator. I've only done Despicable Me once. I don't think I ever did Jimmy Neutron. It just was
I've done both. Like you said, it's not entirely like hateable.
Yeah.
But I can't tell you it's good.
No, and I remember feeling sick on it. Like, I remember like it was It was very jarring. Really not. Just not great. And what's funny is it always, Despicable Me always has like such a massive, you know, wait time. Now it's a part of Minions Land, which I love Minions Land. It's part of Minions Land now. I think it is the same reason why Spaceship Earth gets a really long line. It's the first thing that you see when you walk into the park, so obviously it's gonna have the longest line. All right, I don't want to spend too much time on that one. Going back, number 3 for our best motion simulators. I mean, this one, I tried to make a point for this to be number 2 or even number 1, but you know, you made some decent points. It's Star Tours.
I understand that it could be both.
Yeah. Star Tours is, I mean, as a kid, Star Tours blew my mind to pieces.
Yeah.
It was like, I couldn't believe that I was like, everything from the queue. The queue is still, I still think, the best queue in all of Walt Disney World. Like, when I got in there and I saw 3PO and R2, and like, oh my gosh, and Captain RX-24 in the original. Now, do you prefer the current iteration of Star Wars The Adventure Continues, or do you like the original version with Captain RX-24 and the Death Star?
I mean, listen, no, I love the original version, but I mean, Star Tours has to be the most updated ride in the history of the park, right?
Yeah, it's constantly being updated again next month. I mean, it's so they right. made it so, so, so easy to update it.
It's a great dynamic to it.
Yeah, yeah. And that is one of the other things that I love is that it's so easy for it to you know reinvent itself. I just don't like C-3PO as the pilot. I
know, me too.
Yeah, and I like the variation. I like that, like, you know, it's always easy to get a new experience on Star Tours. I just wish that, you know, and I know they moved Captain Rex over to, you know, Galaxy's Edge where he's the DJ, but I loved having him in the, there was just something, maybe it was because I was a kid, but there was just something about that attraction
awesome.
And Captain Rex that just like hit me differently. I don't know.
I can remember when the new Star Tours was coming out and they were kind of like prepping everyone the same way we are for Tiana's. And they were like, here's the pilot. It's Ace. And it was, you know, this little droid, right? Who you do see in the pre-show.
Who's like, yeah, he's like Captain Rex on steroids.
Yeah, yeah, he's like kind of short and squat. And I'm like, oh, this is great. Like, you know, I love robots and droids. So I'm like, I'm 100% in on this. And then when it actually happens, you're like, oh, it ends up being 3PO. Okay.
It ends up being C-3PO, a character that is, look, I don't hate C-3PO, but I know a lot of people do. Like, a lot of people from like the older generations hate 3PO the way my generation hates Jar Jar.
Right.
Though I don't hate Jar Jar anymore, by the way.
I never did.
You know what? The sequels showed me that there's always a deeper hole that we can go into, and I'm like, oh,
always a bigger fish.
Yeah, there's always a bigger fish, and I'll take Jar Jar. Okay. All right. Number three on our list of worst, we're going back to Universal. Unfortunately, Universal's got apparently a lot of bad, you know, motion simulators. Kong Skull Island.
Yes.
Really bad. Real bad.
Yep.
This ride is the epitome of the line is better than the ride.
Yeah, this is also a ride where when you see the wait time for it and people are waiting, you're like, okay, good. Because I have no intention on doing this ride.
Uh-huh. Keep them all over
get
here.
Get those people off lines that I want to be on.
I don't think they do the jump scares anymore in the line like they did in the beginning. I think that backfired on them a few times.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah. Originally, when you would go through there, people would jump out at you from the shadows and stuff like that. It was not, you know, a good experience. There used to be a restaurant that did that in New York called Ninja New York, where like okay. literally like as you'd be like walking to your table, like ninjas would like jump out at you. And like so and then like your table would be in this like enclosed area with like one of those like sliding doors from like you'd see in like a Japanese like house. Or like old-timey like feudal Japan house, and literally whenever your waiter would come to the table, he throws the door open and jumps in at you and goes, huh.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I went there for my birthday one year, for my 30th birthday, I believe. That place doesn't exist anymore. The food wasn't that good.
Do you remember Mars 2112 in the city?
I don't remember that.
It was an Earth-themed restaurant that was alien-themed, and you actually had to ride a motion simulator. Tying it into this episode
oh, there we
to
go.
Get to the restaurant.
You're tying it all in.
It's interesting. I did a couple times.
So when you get onto Kong Skull, what a cool like facade that this ride has, like the entrance
yep.
with like the big like Kong out of stone. So, so cool. Well, the skulls everywhere and you're like, oh man, this looks like it's going to be epic. And then you go in and you get in that truck and you're sitting there and you're like, oh, this is all this is. Because you're just sitting in a truck and it's one of those things where it's like the, you know, the screen is all around you like a tunnel and you're just kind of watching Kong fight dinosaurs and that's it. Like you're just kind of.
Yep.
Yeah. It's just a whole lot of nothing. I cannot say how much I hate that ride enough. It is just like everybody was so excited for it. And I think a lot of people get tricked into going into it because they're like, oh, wow, this looks so cool from the outside. All right. Number two for our best list, Soarin' in Epcot. Now, I wanted to swap Soarin' and Star Tours here. I thought that Star Tours was way better than Soarin', but you made a decent point about Soarin', so I will let you kind of drive this one.
Okay, let's take away the curved Eiffel Tower for a second, because
yes.
I understand, you know, people's distaste for the new one. Although we all still ride it. But this ride system did change a lot of things, right? I mean, we often fault Disney for cloning, you know, this is the same kind of vehicle, this is the same kind of ride. I mean, here was an entirely new ride system.
Right.
I mean, Soarin' kind of changed the game a little bit.
And it was a multi-sensory experience, too, with the smells and, like, feeling the wind
yep.
on your face and, Yeah, so I mean, I get it. The visuals are really cool, but I mean, you know, so, bringing back Soarin' over California was a mistake because I'm like, now I just like hate Soarin' around the
I get
world.
it. I'm with you on that.
But everything about Soarin', like it's so Soarin' is a motion. A lot of things with these motion simulator rides, people with you know, motion sickness have a hard time with them. Soarin', however, is something that my father can ride, and my father is very bad motion sickness. My aunt too, same thing, and both of them can ride this ride, and with no problems. Soarin' is just—it's a fun family motion simulator ride. I could never put my father on Star Tours, but
Yeah,
like,
Star Tours gets, and I ride it, you know, all the time, but it does get me sometimes. It's the
yeah,
hyperspace jump every time. I don't know why. It just does me in.
Jakku gets me a lot. Like for some reason, whenever I get Jakku as one of them, I'm always like, oh wow, I really feel sick now. Maybe it's because it's the prequel, it's the sequels, and I'm just like, oh no, somehow Palpatine
I'm on crate. Ugh.
returned. Oh no, this is where Luke Skywalker wasn't. Just throwing up in protest. All right, ready to go to our number two worst. Back to
Okay.
Universal. Back to Universal. And it is Race Through New York with Jimmy Fallon.
Okay, now listen, I've never ridden this. I've been told by people it
It's
is
wretched.
horrendous. Not just by you. I've been told by many other people this ride is hard to get through.
Not only is the motion simulator so egregiously bad, I like it is the closest I've ever come to throwing up on a ride. Like it was literally to the point where I was like, this ride needs to end because I am about to throw up. Like, dude, I've ridden Mission Space Orange, and this was the closest I've come to throwing up.
Mean, how bad would it be to throw up on a ride? That'd be pretty bad.
Be pretty bad. Yeah. Now I wonder if anyone of our listeners ever have. Have you ever like thrown up on a ride, folks? Let us know. Because I want to know. Like, I want to know what happens, what the experience is like. Like, you know. Let us live through your embarrassment. But yeah, the Fallon ride, and not only that, not only is it just a horrible motion simulator that really makes you feel sick, it's painfully not funny. And it's just
That's a problem.
Jimmy Fallon trying his hardest, and Jimmy Fallon is not funny. Or that's my opinion. Jimmy Fallon is not funny. You might find him hilarious, and if so, I really envy you because I wish I could find joy in Jimmy Fallon, but I can't. There is nothing redeeming about him to me. All right, so number we did number two. So no, our number, you know what? Let's do our number one worst and then end with our number one best. So we end on a
Oh,
positive.
that's a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so our number one worst, there's only one other one that I think is like really notoriously bad. And so now the reason why this is number one and not Fallon was because this had when they announced the Jimmy Fallon ride, I was like, that's gonna stink. And I wasn't surprised. When they announced this other ride, I was like, wow, that could be really cool. And it wasn't. And that is the Fast and the Furious.
Yeah, what a letdown.
The single worst ride in Universal. Like, it is not just the worst motion simulator in Orlando. I would go as far as say it's the worst ride in Orlando. It's
That
awful.
weird part where like everybody's partying and
Oh my God.
dancing. I mean,
Cool
wow.
cue. Cool queue when you're walking through the, you know, I get to see the queue every year when I go into whatever haunted house they have back there at Halloween Horror Nights, but you know, it is awful. It's atrocious. I hate it so much.
Yeah.
I rode it one time with friends and I had heard that it wasn't good, but I didn't like say anything to my friends because they were like really excited about it. And I was like, I don't want to like rain on their parade if like it's just people being like, you know, aggressively like, you know, negative. So we'll just see how it happens. And we got off and the three of us were just silent. We were just kind of like, wow, that
Yep.
was really bad. The only thing I really remember about it is like Vin Diesel hanging from a helicopter, like, but he's like the same size as the helicopter. Like the dimensions are all off and oh, it's
Yeah,
so
it looks weird.
no, not good at all. The you know, I think I've said it on the show before. The first words I spoke after our silence was, that was not fast and I'm furious. Because you'd think a Fast and the Furious ride would be like a roller coaster. You think it would be actually something that makes you go fast. Like Test Track is a better Fast and the Furious ride than the Fast and the Furious
Right,
ride.
right.
I don't know. All right, ready for the number one? I mean, there could have only been one answer to number one. We could have. I tried to make the case for Star Tours, but you brought up this one, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's number one. And that is basically the evolved form of Soarin', the what I think is the perfect form of the motion simulator attraction. Flight of Passage.
Right.
Avatar Flight of Passage, Navi, or Navi Flight of Passage, or what is it called? I just someone called Flight of Passage.
I think it's Flight of Passage.
Yeah, when you ride a Banshee through the world of Pandora, I mean, what a amazing extrasensory experience. It is.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people think this is the best ride in Disney, and that's even with, you know.
As the Resistance.
Yeah.
So, which has a motion simulator moment in it, but, you know, not enough to put it on this list. It turns into Star Tours at the end. But, yeah, just the motion simulator on Flight of Passage. Not only is it just an amazing motion simulator, the feel of the dragon underneath you, the fact that, like, they hit you in the eyes with that, like, flash of light, and then, like, in that brief second, the wall so in front of you is just gone. And then, like, the way it comes back. When the wall comes back and you're just, I'll never forget the first time I wrote it and we're sitting there at the end of the ride and the guy next to me, guy that I had no idea who he was, just literally goes, I can't believe I'm back in this room right now. Cause like, it really felt like you went somewhere else.
Yeah.
I mean, there have always been a ton of flying simulators. Disney. It's one of the things Disney has always done is it simulates flying. There's nothing that's ever made me feel more like I am flying than this ride.
Yeah, I agree. It's great.
Unbelievable.
They really did a good job.
They did. So folks, you know, let us know in our Facebook group, facebook.com/group/2men and the mouse, what you guys felt is your favorite motion simulator ride. I'd love to hear it. Love to hear stories.
Yeah, let me
about
also
it.
Say, like we didn't talk about Mission Space, but I could not be more indifferent about a ride than Mission Space. So it is not really like a five best or five worst. It kind of just is.
The other thing about Mission Space, like Mission Space Green, we'll call a motion simulator. Mission Space Orange is not a motion simulator. You're in motion.
Right.
Like you're being spun around in a centrifuge. Like, just a bad time. It didn't make our list, but I would go on Mission Space before I went on like Jimmy Fallon again. Maybe not.
Yeah,
I don't know about
Orange.
That's
definitely true.
All right. So anything else you wanted to add this week?
No, I think we covered them all.
All right. Then that's going to do it for 2 Men in the Mouse this week, folks. Thank you so much for joining us. Thanks to our patrons over at patreon.com/2Men in the Mouse. You guys just got a bunch of exclusive content this week. You got the exclusive early access to this show. You have the video and audio versions of the patron only, the patron experience. And we dropped a new Geek Watchtower this week. We talked about all the geek news of the month, like Avatar, The Last Airbender, and the Acolyte trailer, and all sorts of other things like that. Ghostbusters, Kung Fu Panda 4. So check that out over at patreon.com/2menandthemouse. And if you love our good buddy Peter Mandel, check him out at Rogue Comics over there at Cranford, New Jersey at 105 North Union Avenue, Cranford, New Jersey 07016, or go to roguecomics.com, where you can take a look at Pete's eBay store. If you're planning a trip anywhere throughout the world, but especially those Disney parks and resorts and cruises and whatnot and Universal properties, check out our friends over at Away With Me Travel. Shoot Justin an email over at justin@awaywithmetravel.com or show@awaywithmetravel.com and let them take you away. And for me, folks, my books are all online under the name Vincent Valentin, Valentean. You can find them all on amazon.com as ebooks, paperbacks, and audiobooks. All right, well, that does it for this week. Pete, any closing words?
Have a great week, Kevin.
Have a great week, Pete. Please, folks, keep the magic alive every day of your lives. We will see you next week on 2 Men and the Mouse.
So there's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow shining at the end of every day. There's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow just a dream away.
If you're standing, please hold on to the handrails and stay clear of the doors until the monorail stops completely and the doors open. If this concludes your visit, we hope you've had a wonderful time and will return home safely. Thank you for traveling with us.
This has been YDF Media Productions.